Chapter 40. A distant nearness in the hill. Apostrophe apostrophe, Knight turned his back upon the parish of Indelstow, and crossed over to Cork. One day of absence superimposed itself on another, and proportionately weighted his heart. He pushed on to the lakes of Killarney, rambled amid their luxuriant woods, surveyed the infinite variety of island, hill, and dale there to be found, listened to the marvelous echoes of that romantic spot, but altogether missed the glory and the dream he formerly found in such favored regions. Whilst in the company of Elfride, her girlish presence had not perceptibly affected him to any depth. He had not been conscious that her entry into his sphere had added anything to himself, but now that she was taken away he was very conscious of a great deal being abstracted. The superfluity had become a necessity, and Knight was in love. Stephen fell in love with Elfride by looking at her, Knight by ceasing to do so. When or how the spirit entered into him he knew not. Certain he was that, when on the point of leaving Indelstow he had felt none of that exquisite nicety of poignant sadness natural to such severances, seeing how delightful a subject of contemplation Elfride had been ever since. Had he begun to love her, when she met his eye after her mishap on the tower, he had simply thought her weak. Had he grown to love her, whilst standing on the lawn, brightened all over by the evening sun? He had thought her complexion good. No more. Was it her conversation that had sown the seed? He had thought her words ingenious, and very creditable to a young woman, but not noteworthy. Had the chess playing anything to do with it? Certainly not. He had thought her at that time a rather conceited child. Knight's experience was a complete disproof of the assumption that love always comes by glances of the eye and sympathetic touches of the fingers. That, like flame, it makes itself palpable at the moment of generation. Not till they were parted, and as he had become sublimated in his memory, could he be said to have even attentively regarded her. Thus, having passively gathered up images of her which his mind did not act upon till the cause of them was no longer before him, he appeared to himself to have fallen in love with her soul, which had temporarily assumed its disembodiment, to accompany him on his way. She began to rule him so imperiously now that, accustomed to analysis, he almost trembled at the possible result of the introduction of this new force among the nicely adjusted ones of his ordinary life. He became restless. Then he forgot all collateral subjects in the pleasure of thinking about her. Yet it must be said that Knight loved philosophically, rather than with romance. He thought of her manner towards him. Simplicity verges on coquetry. Was she flirting? He said to himself. No forcible translation of favor into suspicion was able to uphold such a theory. The performance had been too well done to be anything but real. It had the defects without which nothing is genuine. No actress of 20 years standing, no bald-necked lady whose earliest season out was lost in the discreet mist of evasive talk, could have played before him the part of ingenuous girl as Elfride lived it. As he had the little artful ways which partly make up ingenuousness. There are bachelors by nature and bachelors by circumstance. Spinsters there doubtless are also of both kinds, though some think only those of the latter. However, Knight had been looked upon as a bachelor by nature. What was he coming to? It was very odd to himself to look at his theories on the subject of love, and reading them now by the full light of a new experience, to see how much more his sentences meant than he had felt them to mean when they were written. People often discover the real force of a trite old maxim only when it is thrust upon them by a chance adventure, but Knight had never before known the case of a man who learned the full compass of his own epigrams by such means. He was intensely satisfied with one aspect of the affair. Inbred in him was an invincible objection to be any but the first comer in a woman's heart. He had discovered within himself the condition that if ever he did make up his mind to marry, it must be on the certainty that no cropping out of inconvenient old letters, no bow and blush to a mysterious stranger casually met, should be a possible source of discomposure. Knight's sentiments were only the ordinary ones of a man of his age who loves genuinely, perhaps exaggerated a little by his pursuits. When men first love as lads, it is with the very center of their hearts, nothing else being concerned in the operation. With added years, more of the faculties attempt a partnership in the passion, till at Knight's age the understanding is fain to have a hand in it. It may as well be left out. A man in love setting up his brains as a gauge of his position is as one determining a ship's longitude from a light at the masthead. Knight argued from Elfright's unwontedness of manner, which was matter of fact, to an unwontedness in love, which was matter of inference only. Incredules less plus credules. Elfride, apostrophe he said, had hardly looked upon a man till she saw me. Apostrophe apostrophe, he had never forgotten his severity to her, because she preferred ornament to edification, and had since excused her 100 times, by thinking how natural to womankind was a love of adornment, and how necessary became a mild infusion of personal vanity, to complete the delicate and fascinating dye of the feminine mind. So at the end of the week's absence, which had brought him as far as Dublin, he resolved to curtail his tour, return to Indelstow, and commit himself by making a reality of the hypothetical offer of that Sunday evening. Notwithstanding that he had concocted a great deal of paper theory on social amenities and modern manners generally, the special ounce of practice was wanting, and now for his life Knight could not recollect whether it was considered correct to give a young lady personal ornaments before a regular engagement to marry had been initiated. But the day before leaving Dublin he looked around anxiously for a high-class jewelry establishment, in which he purchased what he considered would suit her best. It was with a most awkward and unwonted feeling that after entering and closing the door of his room he sat down, opened the morocco case, and held up each of the fragile bits of gold work before his eyes. Many things had become old to the solitary man of letters, but these were new, and he handled like a child an outcome of civilization which had never before been touched by his fingers. A sudden fastidious decision that the pattern chosen would not suit her after all caused him to rise in a flurry and tear down the street to change them for others. After a great deal of trouble in reselecting, during which his mind became so bewildered that the critical faculty on objects of art seemed to have vacated his person altogether, Knight carried off another pair of earrings. These remained in his possession till the afternoon, when, after contemplating them 50 times with a growing misgiving that the last choice was worse than the first, he felt that no sleep would visit his pillow till he had improved upon his previous purchases yet again. In a perfect heat of vexation with himself for such tergiversation, he went anew to the shop door, was absolutely ashamed to enter and give further trouble, went to another shop, bought a pair at an enormously increased price, because they seemed the very thing, asked the goldsmiths if they would take the other pair in exchange, was told that they could not exchange articles bought of another maker, paid down the money, and went off with the 2 pairs in his possession, wondering what on earth to do with the superfluous pair. He almost wished he could lose them, or that somebody would steal them, and was burdened with an interposing sense that, as a capable man, with true ideas of economy, he must necessarily sell them somewhere, which he did at last for a mere song. Mingled with a blank feeling of a whole day being lost to him in running about the city on this new and extraordinary class of errand, and of several pounds being lost through his bungling, was a slight sense of satisfaction that he had emerged forever from his antediluvian ignorance on the subject of ladies' jewelry, as well as secured a truly artistic production at last. During the remainder of that day he scanned the ornaments of every lady he met with the profoundly experienced eye of an appraiser. Next morning Knight was again crossing St. George's Channel, not returning to London by the Holyhead route as he had originally intended, but towards Bristol, availing himself of Mr. and Mrs. Swancourt's invitation to revisit them on his homeward journey. We flit forward to Elfride. Woman's ruling passion to fascinate and influence those more powerful than she, though operant in Elfride, was decidedly purposeless. As he had wanted her friend Knight's good opinion from the first, how much more than that elementary ingredient of friendship she now desired, her fears would hardly allow her to think. And originally wishing to please the highest class of man as he had ever intimately known, there was no disloyalty to Stephen Smith. She could not, and few women can, realize the possible vastness of an issue which has only an insignificant begetting. Her letters from Stephen were necessarily few, and her sense of fidelity clung to the last as he had received as a wrecked mariner clings to flotsam. The young girl persuaded herself that she was glad Stephen had such a right to her hand as he had acquired in her eyes by the elopement. She beguiled herself by saying, perhaps if I had not so committed myself I might fall in love with Mr. Knight. All this made the week of Knight's absence very gloomy and distasteful to her. She retained Stephen in her prayers, and his old letters were reread as a medicine in reality, though she deceived herself into the belief that it was as a pleasure. These letters had grown more and more hopeful. He told her that he finished his work every day with a pleasant consciousness of having removed one more stone from the barrier which divided them. Then he drew images of what a fine figure they two would cut someday. People would turn their heads and say, what a prize he has won. She was not to be sad about that wild runaway attempt of theirs. Elfride had repeatedly said that it grieved her. Whatever any other person who knew of it might think, he knew well enough the modesty of her nature. The only reproach was a gentle one for not having written quite so devotedly during her visit to London. Her letter had seemed to have a liveliness derived from other thoughts than thoughts of him. Knight's intention of an early return to Endelstow, having originally been faint, his promise to do so had been fainter. He was a man who kept his words well to the rear of his possible actions. The vicar was rather surprised to see him again so soon. Mrs. Swancourt was not. Knight found, on meeting them all, after his arrival had been announced, that they had formed an intention to go to St. Leonard's for a few days at the end of the month. No satisfactory conjuncture offered itself on this first evening of his return for presenting Elfride with what he had been at such pains to procure. He was fastidious in his reading of opportunities for such an intended act. The next morning, chancing to break fine after a week of cloudy weather, it was proposed and decided that they should all drive to Barwith Strand, a local lion which neither Mrs. Swancourt nor Knight had seen. Knight scented romantic occasions from afar, and foresaw that such a one might be expected before the coming night. The journey was along a road by neutral green hills, upon which hedgerows lay trailing like ropes on a quay. Gaps in these uplands revealed the blue sea, flecked with a few dashes of white and a solitary white sail, the whole brimming up to a keen horizon which lay like a line ruled from hillside to hillside. Then they rolled down a pass, the chocolate-toned rocks forming a wall on both sides, from one of which fell a heavy jagged shade over half the roadway. A spout of fresh water burst from an occasional crevice, and pattering down upon broad green leaves, ran along as a rivulet at the bottom. Unkempt locks of heather overhung the brow of each steep, whence at divers points a bramble swung forth into mid-air, snatching at their headdresses like a claw. They mounted the last crest, and the bay which was to be the end of their pilgrimage burst upon them. The ocean blueness deepened its color as it stretched to the foot of the crags, where it terminated in a fringe of white silent at this distance, though moving and heaving like a counterpane upon a restless sleeper. The shadowed hollows of the purple and brown rocks would have been called blue had not that tint been so entirely appropriated by the water beside them. The carriage was put up at a little cottage with a shed attached. A man hostler and the coachman carried the hamper of provisions down to the shore. Knight found his opportunity. I did not forget your wish, apostrophe he began, when they were apart from their friends. Elfride looked as if she did not understand. And I have brought you these, apostrophe he continued, awkwardly pulling out the case, and opening it, while holding it towards her. Oh, Mr. Knight, apostrophe apostrophe said Elfride confusedly, and turning to a lively red. I didn't know you had any intention or meaning in what you said. I thought it a mere supposition. I don't want them. Apostrophe, a thought which had flashed into her mind gave the reply a greater decisiveness than it might otherwise have possessed. Tomorrow was the day for Stephen's letter. But will you not accept them? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Knight returned, feeling less her master than heretofore. I would rather not. They are beautiful, more beautiful than any I have ever seen, apostrophe she answered earnestly, looking half wishfully at the temptation, as Eve may have looked at the apple. But I don't want to have them, if you will kindly forgive me, Mr. Knight. Apostrophe apostrophe, no kindness at all, apostrophe said Mr. Knight, brought to a full stop at this unexpected turn of events. A silence followed. Knight held the open case, looking rather woefully at the glittering forms he had forsaken his orbit to procure, turning it about and holding it up as if, feeling his gift to be slighted by her, he were endeavoring to admire it very much himself. Shut them up, and don't let me see them any longer do. Apostrophe apostrophe she said laughingly, and with a quaint mixture of reluctance and entreaty. Why, Elfie? Apostrophe apostrophe, not Elfie to you, Mr. Knight. Oh, because I shall want them. There, I am silly, I know, to say that. But I have a reason for not taking them now. Apostrophe apostrophe she kept in the last word for a moment, intending to imply that her refusal was finite, but somehow the word slipped out, and undid all the rest. You will take them someday? Apostrophe apostrophe, I don't want to. Apostrophe apostrophe, why don't you want to, Elfride Swankert? Apostrophe apostrophe, because I don't. I don't like to take them. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.